Live from the KCT studios in Ignacio, Robert Earl Keen.
Sweetness, let's valet. We'll order razzle dazzle, we'll share some what they. Our night is off the menu. And may I say, this big band is smashing, so right to swing and sway. I'm telling, I'm not asking, let's valet, let's valet. In silk and sequins, may we, madame, step right this way. Let's valet, feel the difference. Our sweetness, let's valet, bon temps roulet. Ah, sweetness, let's valet.
Robert Earl Keen, live in the KCT studios. Thanks, Robert, for taking the time to come visit us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
It's been a while since you've been to the studio here, but... You've been a friend of KSUT for many years. We even got one of your signed album covers there from the picnic.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a classic shot.
Yeah, that's archive stuff there, man.
And I can't tell you how many other bands have been in this room where you're at right now whose photo sessions have included that being in the background.
Fantastic. I like that.
Yeah. It's a nice little subliminal Robert Earl Keen promo.
Burning cars.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You've been at your vocation and life's work for many, many years now, and it's got to come to you as easy as breathing. But I'd like to see if you can go all the way back to the days of yore. And do you remember your first paid gig, and was there some trepidation at that point?
I absolutely do. Of course, I was scared to death. There was a couple things going on. One, it was when I went to Texas A&M University, and this friend of mine, Ronnie West, who I think it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Ronnie West, down there in Jordan, Texas, and he had this gig playing for the Turf Banquet. You know, A&M is a huge agricultural college, so they had a thing called, who knew, the Turf Banquet, right? So he was invited to play there and sing some songs. And he did this really great thing where he could play the fiddle and sing at the same time. So he had this really great thing going where he's bouncing around with that fiddle and singing these songs. And it was really great and really entertaining. Well, he gets laryngitis the day of. And he says, "You know the songs. You can sing them." And I said, "Yeah, but I can't sing like you can." And he goes, "Yeah, you can." And I said, "Okay, fine." So I got up there and played the guitar while he fiddled, and I sang all his songs. It certainly wasn't as entertaining as Ronnie West was, but it was frightening. I mean, I scared all the grass off the turf banquet, I promise you there, you know. And they paid me $26.
Wow.
$26. And I took my best friend Brian Duckworth to have a chicken fried steak at this place called Young Bloods. And as a joke, I always thought this is weird, you know, like you're really happy and your friend undid the top off the salt shaker and I dumped all the salt on my chicken fried steak. And then I strangled him and smothered him in gravy himself. So that was the end of that story.
Well, I always say, you know, becoming a musician, working musician is a get-rich-quick scheme, and that just shows right there, $26.
$26. I always think the magic of the $100 bill, because like a lot of times people start out, they get paid $100, right? Even today,
yeah.
$100 bill, it still changes your mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is for years it never gets better than that $100 bill. But that first one is pretty great.
And so prior to you actually becoming or reaching toward being a performing musician, I know you've always had an interest in literature and, you know, wordplay, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, did you always think of combining the two, or was it just initially just sort of...
It's the way my brain works. I don't think, one of the things is I have become a huge fan of the songwriting process as it was created, you know, back with the Brill Building people and even musicals and stuff like that. Now I've become a real fan of the form of songwriting. But for years, I just thought I was, you know, just doing what I only thing I was doing was making it up, relatively speaking. And I never came to a song with like a title in mind or, you know, really an end in mind at all. If it were a narrative song, it was always just about kind of a picture in my mind, basically just like how I think when I read a book. When I read a book and I see, you know, somebody driving down that long road and all of a sudden the trees open up and they get into this huge desert area and then there's a lake and then there's a bear and then there's, you know, a naked woman. Somehow come there's always a naked woman in all my things. So, you know, and then all of a sudden it opens up and that's how I would write a song, would think in terms of, oh, all these pictures right here. Like that song I just did there, Latz Valet. That's just really this series of pictures that I have in mind about, like, you know, going to some really, like, really, really fancy place and eating, you know. So, and it all being really sparkle and like that. And I think in terms of those. And so I just use the words to describe the pictures.
And where does the melody and the guitar chords come into that process?
I just steal those from other songs. No, I'm kidding. What I do is a lot of times the engine of the whole song is the music, and I sort of just strum until I get an idea. And if I don't feel like I'm getting an idea, then I'll change chords or I'll change, you know, styles of playing. You know, I'll finger pick something or I'll strum something or I'll sort of, you know, just slam on it real hard. And so at that's how that happens. It's like I get sort of a swirly idea in my head, and then hopefully it marries to some kind of melody that I've come up with. Let me say, you know, there's no wrong way to write a song as far as I'm concerned. But a lot of people start with just a melody. You know, they always say that famous McCartney story about yesterday was really started with scrambled eggs. So, you know, I never had that happen for me. I've always had the melody sort of just prompted the ideas and the music and the words themselves a lot of times.
Well, I know you've probably been, inundated over the years with the questions regarding what is arguably your most famous tune, Road Goes On Forever. Mm-hmm. But could you deconstruct how that particular song came about as far as you know, lyrically or idea-wise, was that based on something you read in the paper, or how, you know, what's the nugget of that particular?
It was based on the thought of that I wanted to write a real blistering story song. Yeah. And I was thinking about, I lived in this little, you know, hayseed town called Bandera, Texas at the time. And there were a lot of ne'er-do-well kind of people there. And that's, I can talk as bad as I want to about them because they literally kicked me out of the town. So I started with this couple that I knew that just, you know, were bound for just disaster, and started writing about them. And that's how I did that. So I got four verses into the song, and I just didn't feel like, and then everything that I was coming up with seemed not to fit. It didn't seem to really follow what I had started. And I let the song go. And I was making this record, West Textures, with Jim Rooney, who's a really, really great guy and a famous producer from Nashville, actually from the East Coast originally, but lived in Nashville at the time. And I was friends with Jim. And I went there, and he was going to produce this record for me. And so I played him the songs, and we were set to start on Monday. And this was on Friday. And when I finished all these songs, which there's a lot of good songs that I still play today that are on that record. When I finished those songs, he said, "I just don't hear it." You know, the classic Nashville producer thing.
Yeah.
I don't hear it. I don't
the
hear
hit.
It. I don't hear a hit. You know, I don't hear an anchor song to the thing. And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "We'll just cancel it and postpone and come back in a few months." I said, no, Jim, you don't understand. I spent literally every nickel to be here, sitting here with you right now. I have not a penny in my pocket, and I can't do, there's nothing else I can do. And he said, "Well, all right, what do you suggest?" I said, "I got a song that I think is pretty good, and give me till Sunday, and let me finish this and bring it over to you." So he said, "Okay." So I sat in my friend Robin Beresford's backyard all Friday night and Saturday, and, you know, made this song happen. And I brought it over to Jim on Sunday, and I played it, and he went, "Bingo, there you go. Let's go with that." I said, "Fantastic." So, you know, we were back on, and, you know, had he not given me that opportunity, I might not have finished that song. I do have some unfinished songs out there. Most of them are about, one's called Mi Hamburguesa, so you can understand how that goes.
Yeah, a lot of Spanish slang involved in that song.
Yeah, it's really good, though, but I need to finish it, Mi Hamburguesa. And it's also sort of, I need to get like Raul Malo to sing it. It would be perfect.
Well, you know, speaking of collaborating, I know over your discography, the very majority of your songs are just Robert Earl Keen penned. You've got a couple that you've co-written with your bass player.
Right,
and,
Bill, yeah.
And then the odd one here and there.
Yeah.
Obviously you must find your self-contained songwriting works for you.
I like writing songs with other people, and I've written a lot of songs with them. I feel somewhat out of control and somewhat compromising to the song, not to the person, but to the song when I'm writing a song with somebody else. And the idea at that point to me is to finish it, not to like make it perfect or come up with some really grand scheme sort of original idea or something that I think is original anyway. So a lot of times those songs just don't kind of work out. But I do feel very comfortable writing my own songs. I really get way, way inside my head, and I'm able to forget all any problems that I have or any even obligations. I just, you really get lost in it. And it's the greatest thing about any kind of creativity, any art, any work that you love, you know, you just lose time. So I don't want to share that with everybody.
We'll keep it on the down low.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about the other side of the coin? I know that you cover songs on mm-hmm. occasion.
Yes.
What do you look for, or what calls out to you in such a manner that you're like, wow, this deserves to be on my next album, or I can really do something with this particular songwriter's work here?
There's a couple of things that go on there. Number one, I think that there are At one point, I had there was a you know, there, and I still think I have a lot of people out there that listen to me. But there, at one point, there were a lot of people listening to me. So what I was trying to bring to the forefront was people that I thought were really great, and that these people should be turned on to and should be, you know, be aware of. So I was, you know, doing those songs, but also we're very like minded. All these people that I've chosen over the years, you know, Greg Brown and McMurtry and, you know, and Todd and all these guys, we're very similar in our, I don't know, just in our way. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of things that we're not pretty much close-minded, not close-minded, but similarly minded about. And so I like to do songs that I think that I could have written, but I probably couldn't have written, you know. I just, you know, I feel so close to it that I think, God, I wish I could have figured that out, you know. That is so brilliant. So so instead of just trying to rework their work, my thing is it seems more honest just to do their song.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, can we hear another tune from you right now?
Yeah, sure. This is one that what have I done? I put on a record called Farm Fresh Onions, and you can check it out later or something. But it's called Beats the Devil. And when we did it, we were having really, Farm Fresh Onions was one of my favorite records that we made. I made it with my guitar player, Rich Brotherton, and we were just sort of just like, going, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. And we were just throwing all these good ideas. And some of them, most of them turned out to be really good ideas, but some of them are a little weird when y'all look back at it. But at the time, we had a really great time. And I always feel like my best records are the ones that I had the best experience making. And we had a great time making this record. When we made this particular song, I always go back to it. And I think that on that one, we might have made a mistake where we put a little bit too much on it. And I think the lyrics really great. So, it's kind of this man walks the earth kind of song. And so I've refitted it, and we play it now at the show with a more, you know, just sort of acoustic feel and just sort of a drive thing. So I'm going to play it right now. I can't remember when I was here, but I'm back. I better know your friend, and everything has changed. The sun burned up, the sky turned green, the air it smelled of gasoline. The soldier boy, the teenage queen have since become estranged. I keep moving like the wind across the sea. What I'm doing beats the devil out of me. I was tethered to the plow, I came untied, I don't know how. That's all behind me now, like some exotic dream. I woke up in all in mud and sticks and stones and bones and blood, and everything I knew was good I'd vanished with the steam. I keep moving like the wind across the sea. What I'm doing beats the devil out of me. Now I walk this earth to find a place to rest and peace of mind. I walk on until I'm blind, until I'm old and gray. So my friend, good luck to you, I wish you well in all you do. Here's hoping your dreams come true, you never have to say. I keep moving like the wind across the sea. What I'm doing beats the devil out of me.
Yeah, I think the unvarnished treatment works well for that song.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. I like how the words kind of fit together. You know, sometimes there's this deal. There's this great short story by Dave Hickey called "The Glass Bottom Cadillac," and it's about Hank Williams. It's a really cool story. And at one point, and it's from Hank Williams' perspective, so it's in first person. And at one point, he says the words and the sound of the words and the music just all went click, and they all came together. And that particular thing right there all went click.